Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. This episode, we talk with a former Hackfort director and Boise event organizer to discuss the state of tech events and the challenges of building PCs. I am your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Mike Taylor. It's not very often that we get new people on the Hardware Asylum Podcast. Normally, it's myself and Darren. We kind of talk about tech and paintball sometimes and Battlefield 6 and my S10, which is next to me that hasn't really moved for a while. I got to get on that. But for this episode, we have a special guest, Mike Taylor, who I've known for several years, primarily through the Boise LAN and Hackfort.
Yes. I actually met you at the Boise LAN doing liquid nitrogen cooling.
Well, was that the LN2 one, or was that the dry ice one?
Oh.
Where we had the newscasters come through and...
I'm pretty sure it was liquid nitrogen first.
Oh. Well, the first one... Well, okay. So the first...
No, you're right. Yeah. It was probably dry ice.
Yeah. Interesting side story there is like Constantine, who runs the Boise LAN, he approached me and, well, we kind of approached each other because I wanted to attend the LAN and I wanted to give something back. And he says, well, what can you do? And I said, well, I can do some overclocking. So, hey, that would be awesome, because he hadn't ever seen that stuff before. Mm-hmm. And so I had this plan where I was going to do a class or a little demonstration early on during the lull of the show. Started to prep. I was really nervous because I'm a bit of a not wanting to talk in front of people sort of thing, which is weird because I'm on a podcast all over the world. But that's weird. Yeah, I know. Super weird.
I do things I feel uncomfortable about all the time because it's a challenge.
It right? is. Yeah.
And you got to challenge yourself.
Well, and I was within friends, so I really shouldn't have been nervous. But any event, long story short, I pull out the board and I start to get it all set up and I'm going to fire it up. And it like doesn't work. I'm like, well, this seems weird. Why doesn't it work? So I start flipping all these switches. It was one of the super overclock boards from Gigabyte that has switches everywhere. And if you don't have everything perfect, it won't work. Hmm. And in this case, something messed up. We'll go and cancel my presentation, mm-hmm. which was kind of unexpected, but Constantine understood. And you know, the people of the Boise LAN, they just wanted to play games anyway. So they went doing their stuff. I go home, grab another board, and I come back. And at that point, I kind of felt bad about not doing the demonstration. So I set up in one of the corners back by the loading dock and start setting up this board for dry ice overclocking. Once I get it all fired up, you know, you see a couple of smoke plumes coming off. And Constantine makes an announcement, say, hey, Dennis is over here doing some overclocking. Stop by if you have any questions or you want to see it. And it was like a wave of everybody at the LAN got up and came by and started watching what it was that I was doing and asking questions, which was great. Mm-hmm. And then maybe an hour later, some newscasters came by because they were reporting on the Boise LAN. Because it was like Boise LAN 2 or 3 or something like that, right?
I think it's 2.
Yeah. And so they start walking through and they were sitting there watching me for like 15 minutes recording stuff and asking me questions. I'm like, holy crap. I didn't think that it would be that big of a deal.
Nope.
Since then, things have kind of steamrolled. And that was really where I met you and Sean. Mm-hmm. And you invited me to Hackfort.
This is actually, I didn't think of this before, but we had a little pre-talk.
Yeah.
Just to show, you know, behind the curtain a little.
We always, well, and Darren and I do this too, where, you know, we'll get together for, you know, snacks and drinks and stuff like that. And we just basically talk about the outline for the show that we're going to be recording.
Right.
And I wanted to bring Mike into that same sort of cadence. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about all sorts of stuff.
And we were talking about, you know, events and ROI for people bringing something to an event.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this is in like... You know, you probably didn't get many business leads at this thing. You know, it was like a cool getting yourself out there doing something new, but you probably also didn't have much expectations, right?
Like, well, no, I was honestly at the time, it was how I paid for my ticket to get to the Boise LAN.
you got a free LAN out of it. That's amazing.
Yeah, I got to, you know, I did some overclocking, spent some money there, and got to show my craft to everybody. And myself and three of my crew got to go and attend the LAN party and play games.
That's awesome. This is, I don't know, bring it back up without ever talking about it yet on the podcast.
Yeah.
But this unintended ROI, right? Like, I'm sitting here today because of that. Isn't that nuts to think about?
Yeah.
Like, and I also was not associated with Hackford at all at that point. I had no idea. Like, I was working at Boise State, I think, at the time, like, doing communications work. And
did you go to Boise State?
I did go there, yes. Oh. I got my master's there.
Oh, well, okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I went there for my pre-architecture program. In any event, Boise State, for those that don't know, you know, we talk about this a lot. We're in Idaho. Boise's just, what, 8 miles from here.
Right.
And Boise State has been one of the colleges for most everybody that lives here that they've at least taken a class there, if not getting a degree.
Right. And I sometimes forget that this is not a local.
Yeah. Normally when I talk about the podcast, it's the local aspect of the show has been removed.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the only time we bring it up is when, you know, it's fall. So we open up the garage door and every once in a while you'll hear a random motorcycle drive by or, you know, some people walking their dog staring at us in the garage here, which is building two, by the way. And yeah, I don't know. It's good fun. Any event, to your point, yeah, you weren't with Hackfort just quite yet, but you were good friends with Sean, who was, or was
I don't think
kind
he
of
was
a...
then either. Yeah. He was volunteering at Hackfort, which, I mean, anyone can just volunteer, right? Like,
oh, well, yeah, I guess it is. Well, and maybe we should talk about what Hackfort is. So as you know, we've talked about this before on the previous shows, and if I think about it, I'll put links down in the show notes. But we have this event, which is Treefort, and that was started as a music festival sort of thing. And it was people leaving, I want to call it
South by Southwest.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just down south of Idaho. And as the artists are leaving that, they're migrating up and they can attend Treefort because it kind of happens about a weekend after that.
And that was totally by design, right?
Yep. Yeah. And so we have these, what I'm going to call sub-forts, that kind of attach on to the Treefort Music Festival. So Hackfort's one of them. And then I think one year we had a yoga fort and we have like an art fort and a...
Yoga fort's back. It took a little break, I think.
Yeah.
They're coming back this next year. Art fort also... It's always kind of been there. Sometimes it's official, some it's not, but it's, you know, there's a huge, it's hard to, like the whole thing is art, right? Like, but.
Well, it's somewhat of, you know, for people that are artists, they can attend these things. And I think one of the classes was you just come in and you draw stuff, you know, paint stuff. And, you know, you have the person running the course that will go and point out things that, hey, you could do this better if you did this and stuff like that, and just kind of help you with your craft, or you can just come out and just build stuff.
Yep.
The idea is that not to be kind of like granola hippie stuff, but it's a way to engage the community into things that they enjoy doing.
Right.
And with Hack Fort, it was, well, and there was Podcast Fort too.
Podcast Fort, Story Fort, Comedy Fort, Ale Fort, Skate Fort.
Yeah.
What am I missing?
Like anything with
Food Fort. And then there's some secret forts that no one knows about. I won't divulge.
that's perfectly fine.
Unless you email me.
So in any event, after that overclocking demonstration, Sean reached out to me and said, hey, so I'm running this thing called Hack Fort. I would love to have you kind of do something. And I'm like,
By the way, I think that was my idea, but...
Well, okay. Well, we're going to say that it's Mike's idea. Yeah, the conversation was, I would like to have you at Hackfort. And then I said, well, what is it that I'm going to need to do? Because it's like, you know, what is it that I need to do to actually attend this thing? And he says, well, we can give you a spot on the show floor where you can do maybe an overclocking demonstration. and we want you to do a talk. And at the time, I'm thinking, well, a talk. I don't really want to talk in front of people. At the time, I agreed. It's like, I looked into previous Hack Forts, and they weren't that engaging, I should say. There wasn't a lot of people there, which, you know, kind of spoke to the type of events that were there, because there wasn't a lot of people actually that supported Hack Fort, so not a lot of people went. Well, after I agreed, and I started following this along, Sean and you were on the Boise radio through the college.
We were?
Yeah.
I don't remember this. Maybe Sean was.
Maybe it was just Sean.
Yeah.
But any event, so he was up there and he was talking about Hack Fort. And he mentioned that we were going to have somebody doing an overclocking demonstration.
I think I remember this.
Yeah. And the radio host got really interested because he's like, well, what's an overclocking demonstration? So he started talking about what it was that I did at the Boise LAN. And I want to say that that one event is what cascaded. We're talking about cascades here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cascaded to the fact that when I did my talk at the Jump Center downtown Boise, it was standing room only. There was like a lot of people there. And I'm like, is this normal? And it's like, no. And I'm like, what the hell did I walk into, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically it was, the crowd was awesome. I mean, we had some great questions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Darren's the outgoing guy. He's the extrovert. I'm just the nerdy guy that knows everything. And I kind of sit in the back, and we didn't coordinate on what it is that we were going to talk about. And Darren just wanted to make it a question and answer sort of session. And I wanted to kind of talk about some of the big expensive machines that we had brought.
Right.
And also some of the overclocking stuff. And I remember one of the questions we got from the audience. It was like, so in terms of overclocking hardware, is there stuff that people should collect? And is there a collectible nature to computer hardware?
Huh.
And Darren goes and starts spouting off some stuff, and I can't remember exactly what he said, but he didn't really answer the question at all.
Mm-hmm.
And
was this a plant? Did you plant this person in there?
I kind of wish I did, but but I was playing off of him, and it's like, I looked over at him, it's like, and then I looked at the guy in the audience, it's like, did I answer your question? It's like, no, not really. It's like, I'm kind of with you on that one. And then I start spouting off about how, yes, there is collectible hardware, but it doesn't last forever. Eventually, you'll outgrow it to the point where it's not useful anymore. So it's nice to have it, but it's not something that you're going to stick around and keep. And I'm saying that as we look back here and we got like retro hardware from the 80s behind us,
right,
on shelves and stuff like that.
Well,
it's not terribly useful, but right, it's something that you want to have.
Like, all hardware becomes obsolete, but then it's how you, what you do with it after that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people will, like, not to.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just thinking about AI lately and all this funding and infrastructure around AI, and what a lot of people don't necessarily think about, all this money and all this hardware that'll need to be replaced in a couple years.
Oh yeah. Well, we have a vehicle for that,
and
right?
Where does it go? What does it do? You know, yeah, like,
so you spend, you know, like $40, $50, $100 million on AI hardware, and it's going to sit in a data center, and it's just going to be sit there, and it's in its best interest to be used at 100% all the time. So it's just going to sit there and consume a lot of power. Eventually, it'll become old and obsolete. Mm-hmm. Something new will come along. You'll spend another $100 million plus, you know, $20 million, just call it that, to remove the old components and then install the new ones. The old components at that point, from a business standpoint, are a complete write-off. You write it off on your taxes, and then you send it off to a recycler. And if, from a business standpoint, it's a net zero.
So we should get into the recycling business, is what you're saying.
There is a lot of money in recycling electronics.
Really?
Believe it or not, yeah. But, you know, getting back to Hack Fort, at that point, after we had this little discussion about Darren kind of not answering questions, which it was a great response, by the way. But yeah, so then we transitioned into talking about the two machines that we brought. So there was one build that was completely custom, and then there was another build that was built that using off-the-shelf components. And that was eye-opening to some people, because if you don't know anything about it and you look at those two computers, it's like, oh, they look the same. They're both water-cooled. They're both custom painted, and they both have lights and stuff like that. But unless you know something about the computer hardware underneath, you don't know, you don't see the difference. And so that was a teaching moment. And then we transitioned into talking about the overclocking gear. And Darren started walking around with a motherboard. There's a famous picture of him showing that to some, I forget who was actually, he was showing it to, but it was basically the audience and just showing the motherboard and the big,
I think that's the thumbnail for the video.
Yeah. And the big copper container on top and how that actually works. And at that point, that was when some people kind of got glazy eyed and stuff, and they were just kind of listening to what I was saying. And other people were like asking questions about it, which was great. The interaction was awesome. Yeah. And after that, we went out to the show floor, and this is where things kind of got a little chaotic, because on the show floor, there was an esports event kind of going on where somebody was shouting into a microphone and taking up the entire, you know, audio system. But, you know, I set up the overclocking gear and started running some benchmarks. People came by to go and check it out. And some people that weren't at the talk came by and said hi, and some friends came by, and it's like, it was actually really fun. In terms of ROI, it was more of a benefit for me, I think. And it kind of showed that if you have the right advertising, you can have a successful interaction. You know, if we get, it was a DEF CON, the one that happens in Vegas, that I've heard is kind of a year-long thing where they're planning 2 years in advance of what's going to happen, because that event is so huge. And it's across, you know, six different hotels in some cases. And it's a matter of like, well, how do we get people from this place to this place? And is this one going to be mostly for speakers, or is it going to be for demonstrations? And there's a lot of logistics that go into making a large event like that. And of course, if you do a smaller one, things scale back, but there's effort involved. You know, the one that I attended was successful because there was actual marketing put into it to try and attract people to come out.
Yeah.
And I talked about how Boise was a not a tech-centered community. I mean, we have HP, we have Micron, and that's kind of it. I mean, there's other little startups that are tech-focused. But for the most part, it's going to sound really bad, but it's kind of like the retirement community of the Northwest. In the Rockies. And, you know, we chuckle because it sounds funny, but it really, we get people moving in from Washington, people moving from California to go and retire because they can't afford to retire where they live. The fact that we have so many people coming in, it increases the population, but it doesn't increase the working population. And it makes it really expensive for tech people like me to live here. But that doesn't mean that we can't have successful tech events. And what do you think is going to be the catalyst for making those sorts of things successful?
Well, a singular tech event, like Hackforce, extremely broad, very general. And, you know, how we define ROI at Hackforce, like what I considered a success, for example, when I had the luxury of not actually caring much about, you know, revenue or whatever, because...
Well, that wasn't a concern.
That wasn't my concern, right? I wanted to make sure the programming was resonating with people. Like, did people learn something? Did they have fun? Did they get inspired? You know, like, those were my metrics. You know, I would hope that that was happening, and I would hope that the people presenting were getting whatever their metrics were out of it as well. You know, and the challenge of, you can't plan it too early because it's a general tech event, and you want, like, you want to be topical kind of.
Well, there wasn't really a theme.
Right.
So it's not like.
And by design.
Yeah. And it's supposed to attract a wide, diverse group of people. So, you know, the last one that I attended, there was a 3D printing demonstration, right?
Sierra Sanderson, 3D Princess. I think she might not be using that pseudonym anymore, but
But yeah,
her name's Sierra Sanderson. She's great.
And then we had a lock picking demonstration. And so we had some locksmiths.
So popular.
Yeah. And people could come in and actually learn how to pick locks.
That one got the news coming just to talk about lock picking, which is crazy.
Yeah. And the thing with lock picking is there's a mystery behind it in terms of how to pick a lock. But if you know how locks work, it's all you're doing is exercising your knowledge of mechanics to achieve a goal. And it's a matter of using the tools and using the tools the right way.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, I learned early on just because I was curious about, you know, tech and mechanicals, stuff like that. You know, what happens if you take an engine apart? Stuff like that. So I got curious about that kind of stuff. So you would read books on how locks work. And from there, you can, the books aren't going to tell you how to pick a lock, but they're going to give you enough information that you can figure out how to do it yourself. Well, people don't do that anymore, right? So having lock picking at Hackfort, it has nothing to do with really tech. It's more mechanical, but it's a huge attractor. If I remember right, the one that you were setting up for Hackfort the last time you were there, it was like old tech or something like that?
Ooh, yeah.
Where you went to the youth ranch, picked up like an old phone, like a rotary phone.
I spent a lot of my own money going to the antique world market and some thrift stores. And then you donated, was it 5.5 inch? No, 8? No, 7?
No, it was
not 3.5 inch.
It wasn't three.
It was the bigger one that was actually floppy.
Yeah, it was the 8-inch floppy disk.
8-inch.
8-inch. And okay, so
which I had never seen before. Anyway, but yeah, that the whole point of that, again, that turned into something awesome with, you know, I connected with a like-minded person who wanted to show stuff and brought his own stuff, and other people donated some stuff and collaborated with Kid Ford and brought some kids in to, and the whole point was to show people, show kids. It wasn't just kids who were interested in it, of course.
Oh yeah. You get well, there's an entire generation that doesn't know how to program a VCR. And there's an entire generation that doesn't even know what a VCR is.
It's hilarious. But also, like, it makes sense, you know, in retrospect. But it's also a good, like, indicator of what will likely happen with new technologies as well. Yeah. You know, once things are more convenient, we lose skills and contexts that we didn't really anticipate we would lose until it's happened.
So we got to learn a lot about what Mike does. And on this show, when I normally have Darren across from me, we schedule it in such a way that he kind of interviews me on certain topics. And I want to do the same for Mike. So if Mike has any questions that he would like to have answered, tech or otherwise, and see if he can stump me, I guess.
Stump you.
Stump, yeah.
Stump you. I think, first of all, can you help me build my new gaming computer?
I get that question a lot. Unfortunately.
And I wouldn't have asked you normally, but
yeah,
I wanted to put you on the spot.
Yeah, well, okay, so here's the thing. I help people build computers all the time.
Yeah.
But
they got to be good friends first.
Well, there is a bit of that friendship going on. And then there is also who is going to be wielding the screwdriver.
Right. I can build my own. You've seen me on live stream build my own.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's not a good example, actually, because you saw me do it incorrectly, too.
Yeah, that was fun, actually. So, hey, okay.
But yeah, the last two computers I've built, totally all by myself.
Oh, yeah, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't mind pointing people in the right direction. Okay. You know, I've had people
maybe review my PC parts picker thing to make sure I'm not making a huge mistake.
Oh, you know, you see that? So PC parts picker, right?
Okay.
It's a great site. It's an awesome site.
Right.
I find that a lot of people use it as a crutch.
That's what I use it for.
Exactly. Right. So it's like, I want to build a computer using blah. What works? It's great for that. But what I find is that a lot of people use it, and this is where that crutch comes in, right? It's like, okay, I have an AMD 5 machine that I want to put together. What motherboard works? Great. What heatsink works? Great. What case works? Great. Mm-hmm. But then they start looking at the price and figure out which one is the bottom cheapest one that I can possibly buy to bring the price down. Mm-hmm. Instead of actually looking at it from a holistic standpoint of what's going to look best or what is going to give me the best performance. Mm-hmm. And that is where the PC Parts Picker does not help you very well.
And, that's true.
And it's a great resource for people that are just trying to put something together.
It's from my being not super into it. I mean, I have a gaming PC. I also use it for everything else, right? Mm-hmm.
It's the general purpose computer.
Yes. But I know I want it to run games. I know I want to use it for video editing. Plus, I just like having it all be relatively powerful. I don't want any roadblocks.
Of course.
Bottlenecks.
Yeah. And that is where an expert, an asking an expert like myself, or even Darren, for that matter, even though he tries to say that he doesn't know this kind of stuff, he's on par. Knowing people like us can accelerate your build in terms of what do I need to do to make it a good video editing computer versus a good gaming computer. And it really, it's just a minor little tweak. Mm-hmm. There's not much difference in those two workflows.
Yeah.
But you don't get that if you go to PC Parts Picker.
So what am I doing? I was thinking about this too, mm-hmm. like how I use PC Parts Picker, which you've described it pretty much mm-hmm. perfectly so far.
Yeah.
Except I used to go by price, right? Mm-hmm. Now I'll look at the bottom of the price. I'll get the more expensive one over to the absolute cheapest one.
Oh,
yeah. Just because of the price, you know, if you...
It's like it's $2 more. I can afford that.
No, maybe like a, you know, if it's low tier versus mid tier versus high tier, like mm-hmm. I'll go for the mid tier.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Right. Because I don't want like something that'll break or that really sucks, you know. And if I don't feel like doing the necessary research at the time, I will just think price is a good indicator that of quality. You know?
Yeah. And in most circles, yes, that is a good indicator. You know, price will dictate several things. One is popularity. Mm-hmm. You know, more popular products from more well-known brands will command a higher price just because they're full of themselves. It's kind of mm-hmm. like buying an Apple over an Android.
Yeah.
Or buying Bose over Clip.
Which might explain why I don't buy Apple products.
That's good and bad, I guess. You know, and some of the Apple thing is more of a face. You know, it's like, I feel like I am a better person because I bought an Apple product. Mm-hmm. They may not actually use it for why it's a great product. You know,
yeah.
It's that sort of thing. You know, there's marketing that plays into it and all this other crap. And the nice thing about PC Parts Picker is that it will let you know if something is incompatible.
That is another crutch that I have.
Yeah, like. And that's really what gets a lot of people hung up on building their own computer. Mm-hmm. Because there are two basic paths you can take. You can do Intel or you can do AMD. But from that, there are issues of memory. What memory works with whatever platform? PC Parts Picker kind of helps you with that. But mm-hmm. a lot of times it errors on the less performant of the option just because it has a higher compatibility. Yeah. And that's where, you know, I think I've gone to PC Parts Picker once, and that's because somebody gave me a link and say, hey, can you check out my build?
Really?
And I'm like, I have no idea what this is. I don't know what that is. I don't know where this came from. But I knew everything on the list would work together just because it's like, I recognize, oh, this, and this. You know, for me,
interesting.
I go to Newegg and it's like, okay, I'm looking for a motherboard and I need a motherboard for this processor. I know that this processor has this socket. I know that I need a motherboard that has that socket. And that is where my knowledge of computer hardware helps me in actually picking that stuff. And then at that point, I can say, okay, I want like an LGA 1700 motherboard. I can do a search for that. It's going to give me like four pages of motherboards that are available.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not now, but in any event, I can pick from there. It's like, okay, sort by price or sort by manufacturer. I want an ASUS motherboard. So I'm going to find an ASUS motherboard. And then it's like, do I want this one or do I want this one or do I need a certain feature? So that is what I'm looking at when I go and do this stuff.
So I did this exercise not 3 months, 4 months ago where I want to try to buy a computer. I know because Sean told me that.
Sean told me this. I should do that.
Well, this is why I know that my motherboard and my processor are the last of the, like, that generation of Intel processor thing.
The socket has expired.
Yes. That's the thing to say on a podcast dedicated to hardware.
Tech, yeah. That's the proper way to say it. Yes, that's for sure.
So then I go to PC Parts Picker and I'm like, all right, like, what are the good processors? That's where I start. All right, I'm hearing AMD is killing it lately with processors.
Mm-hmm.
This one's like really good for gaming. This one clearly doesn't fit in my current motherboard. So what motherboards does it fit in?
Yeah.
And then I see multiple different kinds, one with like letters in them, ones with numbers and letters.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, all right, well, and this is another tangent, should say, but like, the whole industry is a lot better, I think, than before. Like before, I would need a degree to be able to figure out how to build my own computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at least there's some standards and it's a little easier, but it's still so confusing for the average consumer, I should say.
Yeah. Well, it's confusing to the people that don't do it all the time.
Yeah.
It could be. It's no different than me saying, hey, Mike, let's go and, you know, we got a 12 by 14 shed we need to put together. Saying, do you know how to operate a nail gun? You probably do. Maybe you don't.
I've certainly seen them.
Yeah. So that's the thing. It's like, if you have experience in doing this one particular task, you usually feel comfortable in completing that task.
Right.
Building a PC is not, well, and I've talked about this a lot on previous podcast episodes, where I will build a computer once a week. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just to test something for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So I go pull a motherboard down and I'll spend a half hour putting together a computer so that I can test a piece of hardware for the next hour. And then it gets all wrapped up and put back in the box and put it back on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And then I might do that two or three times a week. Or maybe it's just once a week. When I was overclocking, there would be two systems. There would be a machine on my main lab, and then there would be one out here in building two hooked up to the phaser doing LN2 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that I do that over and over and over again gives me a certain knowledge into what actually works and what doesn't work. I can tell you that computer hardware has advanced 1,000-fold from the way it was 386, 486, early Pentium days.
Yeah.
Where if you just put the CPU in 90 degrees of where it's supposed to be, fries everything. It will kill the board. It will kill this chip. Best case, it will kill the chip.
Right. Might kill you if you touch one of those
transistors
or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess if you lick the back of the motherboard or something like that, it might give you a shock.
Yeah.
It's 12 volts. It's while not gonna
hurt plugged
you.
In. I don't
yeah. Know. Some people are really... They're taking the old approach of like installing memory. We'll say, oh, you have to touch the edges. Don't touch any of the pins. Make sure that you're not walking on carpet. And
oh, I don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Be like grounded and
see, that's
Sean's the one who freaked me out about all that stuff. Yeah. I never used to care about like grounding and touching metal and yada, yada. But
well, grounding is important, right?
Yeah. But going out of my way to ground when I'm like,
yeah, I'm not
full of static electricity.
it's not as big a deal as it used to be. What kind of the eye-opening moment for that was a long time ago, right? I was building one of my first computers. It was like a 386 or something like that. I needed memory. So I went to RJM Electronics, which was a local electronics store here in Boise. I walked in and say, hey, I need 4 megs of memory. And he goes, all right, cool. He walks into the back and he comes out with 4 megs of memory, has them in his hand. He's walking from the back to the front, having them in his hand. And then he puts them in a static bag and then gives them to me. I pay for them and I walk home. At that point, I realized that this whole static electricity thing is probably not...
It's to sell bags.
Yeah. It's not as big of a deal as it used to be.
Wristbands.
But the computer hardware has also advanced to the point where they removed that problem.
Yeah.
And it's something that Darren and I talked about, how motherboards have designed themselves to have safeties. So if you actually put voltage in the wrong way on a modern motherboard, it's not going to really do anything. But if you do that on an older board, it's going to send power down the wrong path and it will just fry everything. Well, you know, it's just a matter of having diodes added to it. And it's something that they didn't do on early electronics because it cost extra. But, you know, this is a long tangent down the path of modern computers are pretty much foolproof. And so if you have an expansion card, chances are it will fit in a modern computer, because there is a standard in how the PCI Express is set up. The CPU sockets are in such a way that you can only install the CPU one direction.
Yeah.
And if you try to force it, then you're going to damage it and it's kind of on you. People try to say, oh no, that wasn't my fault. But really, it's on you. You can't install DDR4 memory in a motherboard that supports DDR5. The keys are wrong. Going to PC Parts Picker and saying, hey, I want this and this and this. It's why I say it's a crutch, because it's for people that don't do this every day and are just trying to taste the, I want to build a computer because my friend says I need to. Where do I start? It gives you a place to start.
And it, you know, it's worked.
Long story short, yeah, if you want me to look at your PC Parts Picker list, I'll take a look. But chances are what I will end up doing is saying, well, you want to use like a Ryzen 9000 series. I'm probably going to take that processor and say, well, I'm going to suggest going with this motherboard because I've tested it or I might have one. I'm going to suggest, hey, you should use this memory because XYZ.
Right. That's another thing. I heard you at this other thing that we did. I don't know. We didn't sign any NDAs.
No, we didn't.
We did this focus group, and I learned so much just from that focus from other people, like about memory. And I guess it's one of those things where I learn enough about a thing to get the thing I want, or, you know, done, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that's...
and PC Parts Picker is a place I usually go to start, but then I'll... You know, that'll take me to some different articles. And of course, I'll review whatever you said on Hardware Asylum.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah. Make me feel good about reviewing stuff. But no, that's good, because that is actually the right approach.
Right. I don't just take this list for granted. Like, oh, it says it's compatible. Must be true, because I have been burned by that kind of thing before. And, you know, I've made some dumb purchasing decisions with PC parts before.
And the manufacturers help you, especially like AMD, for instance, right? There's been a 9000 series GPU for like the past 15, 20 years. Which one do I get? You know, it's just like, is it the letters beforehand or is it the letters afterhand? There's no distinction between if this is the good card or if this is the bad card.
Yeah.
And... that's just that's a failure on the manufacturer, making it really difficult to make a decision, because they are assuming that the people that are buying these things already know this. For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or subscribe to us on YouTube. This has been an Engineering Production, copyright 2025. Thanks for listening.